I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Army of the Brave and Accidental is the debut novel of Alex Boyd. He joins me now to talk about his reimagining of James Joyce's The Odyssey. I'll get Mr. Boyd to tell us about his book as well as these characters he's cultivated and where he places them. The book is described as genre-bending. I've started it, and it's quite affecting and often lyrical. At its heart, relationships are worked out, if not understood. Alex Boyd is an essayist, editor, critic, and author of the poetry collection Making Bones Walk. He is the recipient of the Gerald Lampert Memorial Award. He helped launch the Best Canadian Essay series and co-edited its first two collections. This new book is published by Knightwood Editions. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Toronto, Alex Boyd. Mr. Boyd, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. How many kids do you have?
I actually have two now. It was one when I was writing the book. And I don't think I realized at the time that that was going to, you know, sort of get embedded in the themes of the book, but it certainly did.
I guess fatherhood gets embedded in all of the themes of life, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was just, the book got started as a writing exercise, and I was thinking of a fun, flexible writing exercise. So I had this character falling back in time, because I thought this will allow me to do whatever I want. And, you know, you want to be able to turn off the internal sensor that stops you from writing. So if you can make it a fun and flexible exercise, then all the better. So then I just liked what I was writing and just kind of kept on going. And themes of fatherhood didn't really get into it until later. I just kind of thought about making it a quest when it came time to give it a plot and a structure. I thought about making it a quest story. And the ultimate one is the Odyssey, which is 2,800 years old, one of our oldest stories, really.
Yeah. What has being a father taught you that someone like me who doesn't have kids can't know?
It's a good question, and it's a hard one to tackle because you don't want to sound like overbearing, and you don't want to sound like you don't want to sound like everyone has to go and have kids, because I think if you don't, then you have more time and more money for other things. But it's certainly more money, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, what's rewarding about it is something that you care about more than yourself. And it's sort of a different feeling from any relationship or any sort of hobby or passion or interest. Difficult thing to describe, but I feel a bit more opened up to the world, a bit more compassionate, a bit more like I really own a feeling that, as cheesy as it sounds, we're all kind of in this together, and, you know, we can collectively make it a better world or not trouble with that at all.
Yeah.
I think before I had kids, I just kind of thought backwards. I thought about my dad and his retirement and, you know, sort of him being happy. And I guess now I think forwards to the next couple of generations a lot more than I did before. And if I did it before, I think I did it without quite the same feeling and sort of hope that I have now, if that makes any sense.
I only started the book recently, so it is told backwards. Is that right?
I'm sorry. The main character.
The book itself, is it told backwards?
Well, the story is linear in the sense that we follow the main character from a beginning to an end. But he's falling backwards in time. So it starts sometime in the future when the year isn't really mentioned. In the future,
yeah.
Obviously they discover time travel and the character's falling back. So in the Odyssey, Odysseus, of course, is off fighting a war, and it's a good 20 years before he's back with his wife and family.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of loved sci-fi, and I liked the idea of having this character falling back in time, but trying to get back to his family.
So Oliver is, I guess, the first character that we meet. I'm fascinated by him because, I'll ask you, what is he like?
Well, at first I thought that he was supposed to be kind of like Odysseus. Basically, I changed all the names.
Right.
Generally, well, actually, I didn't change all the names, but if I changed the name, I kept the first letter. So at first I did kind of think he was supposed to be a kind of a very assertive guy. But, you know, I think if you're going to do a retelling and a 21st century retelling of a very, very old story, and it's a story that's been retold before, but of course I'm just, you know, putting my spin on it. But I think I just eventually kind of settled into making it making him a very modern guy and kind of a sensitive guy. It just kind of felt right for the story, I think, because he's observing a lot of things. I wouldn't say that the book is overly flowery, but there's a few kind of poetic lines in there. What I've published before is a couple of books of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to have your main character observing a lot of stuff and you know, kind of thinking in language like that, then he can't really be an insensitive guy. So, yeah, that's how that worked out.
Yeah, so I'm about a quarter of the way through the book, and I reread it again this morning. And what struck me, and it struck me the second read, just as it did the first, was just how beautiful some of the phrases and the words that you choose are. I was struck at how deliberate they are. I mean, you have chosen them carefully, didn't you?
Definitely, yeah. My background is writing poetry, and there's a joke about writing poetry. I worked on a poem all day. In the morning, I added a comma, and in the afternoon, I took it out. So we definitely love to be really choosy about these things, about word choice.
Uh-huh.
And I also tried to strike a balance. I think that it's possible to be kind of overly flowery, to be kind of overly descriptive and overly kind of dense. And, you know, I don't want the reader to feel like they're, you know, trapped in a kind of a thicket of words. I want them to... I want the description to be the spice, but not the main course, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So I tried to kind of strike a balance that allowed the reader to move along, but move along in a way that things are kind of vivid, things are kind of real. You know, that was my goal anyway.
You said a moment ago, Alex, that this began as a writing exercise. So because you have written other things in the past, you mentioned previous poetry, and you're known as an essayist, when was the decision made that this would be the way you would write the first novel?
Like the actual kind of format?
Yeah, the format of it, because it is told by a character in every chapter.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think I like the idea of switching voices. It's just a bit like juggling different balls, you know. Dracula's written that way, of course. Like, it's somebody's journal entry, and then it's somebody else's diary. But it's like a bunch of stepping stones that get you to kind of an end point eventually. And I remember reading that book and just thinking that was really cool. So it just seemed to work well as a device. And I think I like the idea of including, the original story is very masculine. The original story has Odysseus going away. It's kind of all about him. Penelope kind of waits at home. A lot of men are interested in her, but she's not interested in any of them. And then Odysseus comes back and basically kills everyone that was interested in Penelope in the original Odyssey. So this time around, I wanted to include women. I didn't want to speak for women, but I wanted to include their voices in the book. I wanted to have kind of making sure that I was, you know, if you're going to do a 21st century retelling, make sure you've got some diversity and make sure you've got a variety of voices there.
Did you enjoy taking on, say, another voice, especially one that's not your own?
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting challenge. It's with the main character bouncing around through time and bouncing around to different locations, it seems to make sense to use my travel experience, which does kind of show up in it. It's definitely a challenge. You kind of want to, I mean, it's hard to describe, but yeah, no, I'm sort of at a loss for words there.
Yeah, no, you did mention a moment ago that if you want to write this sort of, rewrite this sort of story or get inspired by something previous and then take it into the 21st century, you have to be cognizant of other voices. And you said a moment ago that you didn't want to speak for women, say, but I mean, in a sense, you speak for one female character in the book, one in particular that I'm thinking of. Is that fun in a way?
Is it fun to write that?
Yeah, because you're obviously not a woman, and the experiences that Penelope goes through. Are not ones that say you've gone through.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to make her, if her voice is going to be in the book, I just wanted to make her human and real, you know, which I think is what a decent writer tries to do. I don't think I'm speaking for women in the sense that I don't think it's a book about their concerns.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about their, it's not about women's issues, which they're obviously more qualified to talk about. It's a book about fatherhood and, you know, kind of finding your way and friends. Because really, I think fatherhood was the biggest change that's ever happened to me. I found it a bit of a stressful experience. Like,
yeah.
I woke up in the night of time having difficulty breathing because I just kind of worried I wasn't going to be able to handle it very well, quite frankly. But, you know, once you kind of settle into the role, obviously it's a lot better once you realize that you can handle it. I think, if anything, that's what I wanted the book to be about, is just that idea of fatherhood and friendships and making your way in the world. And I like it being both hopefully a little bit elegant and hopefully very meaningful as well at the same time.
Yeah. Oliver writes about New York. In one of the parts of the book, I've just come back there about a month or so ago, and I don't know. Unlike other places, that city—I mean, it's not the first time I went there either. It sort of stayed with me, and a lot of what Oliver talks about in that chapter are things that I've related to, and I mean, I'm wondering for you, or I mean, are those the same feelings you have for the city?
Yeah, I think my overall feeling about New York was that it's a bit like jumping into boiling water, in the sense that it's just that city's always transforming and moving. And, you know, Toronto's not the same. I grew up sort of born and raised in Toronto, and I lived in Edinburgh for a while. But, you know, New York is pretty, it's got a bit of a fierce feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to be kind of, I don't know, maybe you would agree, but I think you have to be kind of strong to live in New York.
Yeah, you can't just stand around like even on the sidewalk, for example, you can't just stand around there because, you know, you're going to get bumped into and things like that, so you have to keep moving.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And as a kind of an ultra-polite Canadian, I was actually causing problems in New York because I was kind of moving out of the way of other people who were, you know, not really anticipating that. And causing problems by being too polite, actually. But yeah, it's an incredible city. I just think I would hesitate to live there because I'm not sure it's for me. But
that's interesting, Alex, because you see, I've never been to Toronto, and I live in Vancouver. Vancouver's not as big as Toronto, But the assumption is that it's this country's Toronto, and so one would assume people that live on, say, well, I guess it's also on the same, it's in the east, right, or the central part of Canada is the east coast of the United States almost, same time zone, same,
right.
You know, that it would be easy for someone like yourself to make the transition.
Well, you're right, it's very close geographically. I mean, it's not a long flight to New York. You barely have time to read a newspaper article, but I think New York is definitely a lot more intense. That's my feeling. Toronto seems to be trying to become New York as fast as we can. We never put up a 6-story condo. We put up a 30-story one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand the reasoning behind that, because when you go to a city like Paris, what everybody likes is that it's very manageable. It's a lot of six-story buildings and 7-story buildings, and you can just the eye can take it in, right?
Yeah.
It's all very visually manageable.
Yeah. Well, you also talk about Toronto in this book, do you not?
Yeah, I liked the idea of Toronto being kind of mentioned in the same breath with New York or London or just some of the other cities in the world. Hopefully not in a heavy-handed way, but in a way that just kind of casually includes Toronto. And in that sense, I think it's a very Canadian book. I think Canadian books don't need to be self-consciously Canadian, you know, but if you just kind of include your experience with an experience that you had in another country and kind of do a ending in that way, then, you know, it's Canada on the world stage. You're not necessarily going on about beavers and maple syrup or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, what was it a fun book to write, Army of the Brave and Accidental?
Yeah, it was, because I started it on a kind of a fun note, just as a writing exercise. And again, just being able to kind of flip around and do different chapters in different voices, I think that allowed me to kind of instinctively have someone else take over the story whenever I wanted, really. So there are characters that maybe just narrate one chapter, and obviously Oliver comes back, you know, many times, and Penelope many times. And hopefully these people start to feel real after a while, or real enough that it's enjoyable.
What, because this is the first novel, what was the experience like? It's one thing to write stuff, but then to get it published, it has to go through some editing, I'm assuming. Writing is just as much rewriting, isn't it? Did you find that experience of it? Did you find that useful or interesting, at least?
Just the sort of editing process?
Yeah.
I think a big part of getting a book published is just being a publisher that loves it. I spent probably longer, I mean, about 2 to 3 years to write it, and then probably about as long finding a publisher, because I think publishers are pretty overwhelmed these days and don't necessarily get to things very quickly, especially if it wasn't solicited, you know, you're just kind of emailing them or mailing it in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a few years to find a publisher. And then it happened across Andrew McMillan at Megwood Editions, who just really loved it. And so, you know, that's just a kind of a lucky thing. The editing process wasn't too extensive. I mean, I think a good editor makes changes just to help it be more clear and help it be a bit more focused, and doesn't really make changes, you know, just for the sake of making changes. So she loved the book, and we definitely worked on it together and definitely made some changes, but it wasn't a huge a huge or difficult process.
Are you working on another novel now?
You know, unfortunately, I'm stuck for another novel. It's a bit like taking all of your experience and packing it onto a ship, and then you watch the ship set sail, and you're sort of at a loss for a little while as to what to do next. So, kind of hoping first this one will get some reviews and hopefully some positive feedback, and we'll see what happens from here.
It is a beautiful book from what I've read thus far, and I can't wait to finish it, and I appreciate your time today, taking the time to chat with me. Congratulations on this book, and good luck with it.
Thanks very much. I'm glad you're enjoying it. That's great to hear, and thanks again for having me on the show.
The book is called Army of the Brave and Accidental. Knightwood Editions is its publisher, Alex Boyd. Join me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.